that she would want us to go forward with the hearing despite the fact that we have a hearing situation?
Donna Hamm, Mr. Chairman, I think that between Ms. Kirschbaum and myself, we can communicate to her what is happening, and then if she has any questions, if you'll allow us to have the time, it may delay the hearing a little bit while we communicate, but I think we can do it.
That will work for us. Thank you so very much. Okay. Okay, Ms. McFaul, we're ready to begin your hearing, sir. Once again, would you state your name and ADC number for the record?
Olaf McFaul, 083844.
Mr. McFaul, you are here for your revocation hearing regarding the two allegations on your warrant. And based upon information that we have, you were notified of this hearing back on November the 21st of this year. Do you remember that notification, sir?
No, sir.
That's the one that you signed. That's the one that you signed stating that the hearing would be held today.
November 21st?
Yes, sir. You signed it according to where we have your signature. And the only thing that you agreed that the hearing would be held today and some of the conditions.
The notification that I signed, Mr. Chairman, was on December the 4th of 2017. And I would also like the record to reflect, sir, that on the 24th of October, I did not waive the probable cause hearing.
Okay, you did not waive the probable cause hearing. I do not have any information on that at all, sir. That he did not waive the...
I can check.
Okay. Just give us 1 second.
But as far as the notification of this hearing for today, December the 8th,
I can respond.
I'm going to ask the executive director, Ms. Kirschbaum, if she would respond on behalf of the board at this time, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Kirschbaum.
Thank you.
Mr. McFaul, my name is Ellen.
Yes.
My name is Ellen Kirschbaum, and I am the executive director for the board. The board has not had hearing officers, which are the individuals that would conduct the probable cause hearing, and this has been for a number of years due to budget cuts. The board has requested hearing officers. We are hoping that we will receive funding for that. At this time, we do everything we can to expedite warrants as they are received. Hearings are held within the time that is suggested by Morrissey versus Brewer, which is 60 days. And your hearing today of phase one is reviewed as the probable cause hearing, sir. I hope that assists you. And yes, we do acknowledge that you did not waive your probable cause hearing.
Okay, so the notification that I signed acknowledging that I wanted to be present at this hearing today, I signed that on December the 4th. Not November the 21st.
Okay, well, we do not have that. Maybe it's somewhere, but the only thing we have is the one for November the 21st, 2017.
I was never notified on that date, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's what we have, and that was witnessed by you. I'm assuming yes, it was witnessed by your CO3 or CO4 witness that, but do you wish to go forward with this hearing today, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Then on that form that you would have signed, it would have stated that you could obtain a licensed attorney at your own expense to represent you. I don't see an attorney to represent you at this time. Will you be representing yourself, sir?
There is no one in the audience that I'm not sure who's present.
Yes, you have your supporter. That is Miss Eva Linda. What is that? Scott B.
Evelyn Skibby?
Yes, she's present. And we have Ms. Donna Hamm, who I'm assuming is a supporter, or?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a volunteer to help Ms. Skibby because she has a hearing impairment.
Okay, Ms. Hamm is a volunteer to help Ms. Skibby because of Ms. Skibby. And then we have on the phone your sister, Ms. Collins. We also have in the room, and we're going to get to all of this in just a few moments, but since you asked, we also have in the room, as you already met, the Executive Director of the Board of Executive Clemency, Ms. Kirschbaum, and then the others I will introduce as we go through this hearing, sir. So we do not have an attorney in the room, therefore will you be representing yourself, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir. We will move on with your hearing. As Chairman of the Board, I have authorized a two-panel this morning. Therefore, there will be two board members participating in your hearing. And they are the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is C.T. Wright. I'm Chairman of the Board as well as your panel chair today. We also have in the room with us today Mr. Westby. Mr. Westby, who you should be able to see now, is representing the Department of Corrections as well as your parole officer. Mr. McPhail and Mr. Westby, do both of you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so affirm, sir?
I do.
And I'm also going to request that to Ms. Skibby, Ms. Hamm, and Ms. Collins, also, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so affirm?
I do.
Thank you so very much. Okay, we will move forward now with the hearing. As I've indicated, sir, and if Ms. Scully does not need for me to slow down, please let me know, Ms. Hamm, because sometimes I do talk just a little fast, so please just slow me down. Okay, Mr. McFarland, you have two allegations on your warrant. I'm going to read each of them. Once I read each of them, please tell me whether it is true or false. The first one reads that you are in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision Number 7, as demonstrated by your use of opiates without a valid prescription on or about October the 12th, 2017, per the task layout report dated October 18, 2017. Sir, is that true or false?
That is false, sir.
Okay, we will come back to that allegation in just a moment. Okay, the next allegation reads that you are in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision number four, as demonstrated by your leaving your place of residence without prior authorization and not going directly to and from work or other destinations authorized by your assigned parole officer on about October 19, 2017. Sir, is that true or false?
That is false, sir.
Okay, sir, we will receive testimony on both allegations. We'll do them one at a time, but this testimony will be given to the board and to you by the Department of Corrections and Mr. Westby as it relates to allegation number one first, sir.
On September 5th, 2017, the inmate was transported to the Phoenix Parole Office for his initial intake. During intake, the inmate was referred to task for random urinalysis testing and assigned the color of moss. The inmate read, signed, and received a copy of task instruction sheet. The inmate was verbally directed to begin reporting the task when the color moss was announced. On October 12, 2017, the inmate reported to a task facility and submitted a urine specimen for testing for task GCMS lab report dated October 18, 2017. The inmate's urine specimen from October 12, 2017 tested positive for codeine. The inmate was unable to provide a valid prescription for codeine. Follow-up for task laboratory opiate GCMS interpretations regarding heroin. Heroin use is indication by the presence of 6-MAM within the first 24 hours. 6-MAM is not detected after 24 hours, but the metabolite morphine is present for 12 to 72 hours. Some trace codeine may also be present.
Okay, thank you so much. Mr. McPhail, as it relates to allegation number one, why is it false, sir?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this urine specimen is a result of an urgent care trip that I made to, I believe it's, let me see, what's the name of the, I went to urgent care at, I believe, 333 West Thomas Road for a sciatic nerve problem. My back gave out. On that day, before the Dream Center told me that I had to go because I couldn't walk, I called my parole officer, Mr. Van Gundy, and I let him know that the Dream Center, Church on the Street, they ordered me that I had to go to this appointment because I couldn't walk. I go to the urgent care. They gave me a cortisone shot. They gave me a prescription for muscle relaxers and a 4-day prescription for Tylenol 3 codeine. I didn't receive the prescription. They faxed it to the pharmacy on Camelback Road. At the Dream Center, no one there possesses the medication. There is a coordinator here by the name of Mr. Joe Barraza. Once I got back to the Dream Center, he asked for my ID, my insurance card, and he went and retrieved the prescription. About 6:30 on that same day, October the 11th, I received the dosage of the pain medication. The next morning, I went to the dispensary to get that morning's dose. That's when Mr. Barraza, who is also the coordinator for anyone that is in that program that's on parole or probation that has TASC, he informed me that my color had came up, which is moss. At that time, I asked Mr. Barraza, I says, well, the medication that I'm taking, make sure that you notify my parole officer because it's going to test positive.
So the question is, did you ever provide a valid prescription to your parole officer? Did you provide one? I hear what you're saying, and you have an opportunity, if we go into phase two, to explain it further, but did you ever provide a valid prescription?
I never had the prescription. The only way that the prescription could have been provided was through this coordinator in the program. I don't have the medication. I never had the prescription because it was faxed by the urgent care straight to the pharmacy.
Therefore, you did not have the prescription yourself?
No, sir. This is what I'm explaining.
Okay, I believe that Ms. Please just hold on. I believe that Ms. Hamm wants to say something on your behalf at this time as it relates only to allegation number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Donna Hamm from Middle Ground. When I was called by about Mr. McFall's case by his friend, she told me the situation. At that time, I believe she only knew that he had been charged with having a prescription having a drug in his system that he didn't have a prescription for. The second violation, I'm not sure she knew about. But we do have I told her you need to get a copy of the prescription, and of course she doesn't have between the time that he was arrested and the time of this hearing, she didn't have time to get a release of information, health care form from him, which would allow the doctor and or the pharmacy to release his HIPAA protected information. But through whatever persuasive means, she was able to get a copy, an electronic copy of the prescription, which I will give you. And it was written on October 11, 2017, for Tylenol with codeine of 300-30 milligram oral tablet, which he was ordered to take orally every 6 to 8 hours as needed for pain. And I also have a copy of the patient discharge instructions that he received, that Mr. McFaul received from Express Urgent Care, and I will provide those to the board.
Okay, thank you. And as you know, that they will not be returned. Thank you.
And I would, Mr. Chairman, just, I would like to point out that the reason the word void is written across the front of that prescription is not because the prescription is was voided, it's because that piece of paper is an electronic transmission, and you could not take that piece of paper to a pharmacy in order to obtain the prescription. That's just a replica of the actual prescription. So they wanted to make sure that no one could use that as a prescription.
Thank you so very much. Do you have any questions for Mr. Neal?
No question.
On his relation to allegation number one. Okay. Okay, now we will get testimony on allegation number two. Or did you have anything else you wanted to say, Mr. Neal? I mean, I'm sorry, Mr. McPhail, on allegation number one, inasmuch as Ms. Hamm has provided some paperwork to the board?
No, sir. Okay. I would agree with what has transpired, that the prescription was authorized by the urgent care.
Okay, thank you.
We move to the next issue.
Thank you, sir. Okay, now we will go to allegation number two, and we will ask the Department of Corrections, Mr. Westby, if he would be kind enough to provide us testimony on allegation number two.
On September 5th, 2017, the inmate was released on home arrest status and transported to the Phoenix Parole Office for his initial intake. During intake, the inmate read, signed, and received a copy of his conditions of supervision, special conditions, GPS conditions, home arrest conditions, and medical marijuana directive. The inmate was assessed at intensive supervision due to being in home arrest status. Sunday, October 15th, 2017, at approximately 12 p.m., Parole Officer Van Gundy conducted a face-to-face contact visit with the inmate at his approved residence. During the field visit, the inmate's weekly itinerary was reviewed, discussed, and uploaded into 3M. During this face-to-face contact visit, the inmate was reminded by Parole Officer Van Gundy three times to make sure to not deviate from his itinerary for any reason at any time. Due to Parole Officer Van Gundy going on vacation the following day, the inmate was provided the telephone numbers to Senior Parole Officer Beretta and Parole Officer Pogue in case the inmate had an emergency or if he needed to request a modification to his itinerary. The inmate was reminded that any changes needed to be pre-approved by a parole officer prior to any unauthorized movement. On October 19, 2017, Senior Parole Officer Peretta reviewed the offender's GPS points. GPS confirmed the inmate's movement at 0930 to 1105 hours. The inmate traveled to and was at Ranch Market at 3223 West Indian School Road, Phoenix, Arizona, 85017. From 1219 to 1315 hours, the inmate then traveled to a building near 19th Avenue, Camelback, Phoenix, Arizona. From 1352 to 1429 hours, the inmate then traveled to Baptist Hospital located west of 19th Avenue and Bethany Home Road, Phoenix, Arizona. From 1448 to 1504 hours, the offender traveled and was at Christown Mall, located east of 19th Avenue and Bethany Home Road, Phoenix, Arizona. From 1536 to 1540 hours, the inmate was at Circle K Convenience Store, located at 27th Avenue and Indian School Road, Phoenix, Arizona. From 1543 to 1552 hours, the inmate was at McDonald's Fast Food, located near 28th Avenue and Indian School Road, Phoenix, Arizona. The inmate was not given permission from Parole Officer Van Gundy to travel to any of these places. During a face-to-face contact visit with the inmate on October 15, 2017, the inmate was given permission to travel only to Phoenix Municipal Court to check on an outstanding traffic ticket and then to the bank to check about opening up an account. The inmate's allotted time out that day was from 0800 to 1500 and only to go to the bank and court. The inmate was never went to Phoenix Municipal The inmate never went to Phoenix Municipal Court or to any bank during this time. follow-up. On October 19th, 2017, the inmate contacted Parole Officer Pogue to advise of his medical appointments. The inmate was advised by Parole Officer Pogue that he could not authorize any movements that were not pre-authorized on his itinerary until authorization was given by Parole Supervisor Fleischman or Senior Parole Officer Peretta. The inmate did not follow this directive by failing to wait until he received proper authorization. On October 20th, 2017, Parole Officers Pope, Berg, Boo, CO2 Maynard, and Senior Parole Officer Peretta traveled to the inmate's approved placement at Dream Center located at 3210 Northwest Grand Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona, 85017. The inmate was questioned about his failure to comply with his approved itinerary. The inmate stated he needed to have blood work drawn and lab work performed on it. Additionally, he claimed he had a CT scan. These events were not approved, however, could be excusable. The defendant's travel to Christown Mall, Circle K, McDonald's, and Ranch Market were not pre-approved and were a complete deviation from any medical procedures he needed. The inmate would deflect when he was questioned directly as to why he would intentionally violate and travel to locations that were not approved. The inmate finally admitted to not being approved for any of these movements. Furthermore, the inmate finally admitted he was aware if he wasn't pre-approved for movements, he was to stay home per home arrest conditions and Parole Officer Van Gundy's numerous reminders to comply with his weekly itinerary at all times. However, he still violated home arrest conditions and left his residence without approval and traveled to numerous locations that were not pre-approved. The inmate was arrested in the field and transported to ASPC Phoenix without incident.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Westby. Okay, sir, now what is allegation number two in this wallet? Well, they false, sir.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I did speak to my parole officer on October the 15th, in which I gave Mr. Van Gundy my itinerary, which consisted at that time of to check on outstanding traffic warrant from 1990 and to go to the bank. Mr. Van Gundy did give me two numbers. If something came up that my itinerary needed to be altered, for me to contact Parole Officer Pogue or Mr. Peratton. The next day, October the 16th, which was a Monday, my primary care physician contacted me regarding the week before urgent care visit, which the urgent care doctor had outlined follow-up treatment. I didn't know this the day before when I gave my itinerary to my parole officer on that Sunday. Beginning October the 16th, when my primary care physician notified me that because I had spent such a long amount of time in prison, my original diagnosis of my condition, which was diagnosed as a result of an MRI and a CAT scan, was from 1998. She said that in order to adequately treat me, she had to know if something has changed a starting point, so she needed me to go and get blood work and to get x-rays. Back to the October the 16th, I began calling Mr. Pogue and Supervisor Parada. I called that morning, I called that afternoon, I called that evening. I didn't get a response, but I left this information on voicemail. The following day, October the 17th, I called Parole Officer Poe and Supervisor Mr. Perotter. I called that morning, at lunch, that evening. I got no answer, but each one of those calls, I left the same message on the voicemail. October the 18th, I called that morning, at lunch, that evening. I got no answer, but each one of those calls to Mr. Pogue and Mr. Parada, I left repeated the same message that I left those 3 days, the same message that my doctor has advised me that she has appointments scheduled for blood work and x-rays. I selected Ms. Dr. Beverly Carter, who has a clinic at the Dream Center. I selected her as my primary care to avoid having to go all over town trying to find a doctor. That urgent care appointment that I had on the 11th, that was the first doctor appointment that I had been on the outside since 1990. So I had no primary physician. Being that she had a clinic there, it was convenient for me to select her as my primary care because she's familiar with the Church on the Streets program, that they want you to try and schedule your appointments on that one day a week that the men who are in the program has off, which is on a Thursday.
Okay, sir, you can explain that if we get to that point later, but why did you have to go to the ranch market, to Christian Mall and Circle K? Why did you have to go to all those places, sir?
If you will allow me, Mr. Chair. The ranch market, I was at the ranch market because my health care provider, which is Mercy Care, they offer taxi service. I called that morning once I checked out from Church on the Streets, my pass on the 19th. Once you check out, that the rules at the Church on the Streets, once you check out on your pass, which begins at 8 o'clock, you have to leave the Church on the Streets and begin your pass. So I called the taxi care for Mercy Care, my insurance provider, and they were supposed to meet me at the ranch market. That's why I was at the ranch market that morning waiting for the cab. The cab never came because my primary care provider, Ms. Carter, didn't advise me that you have to call 24 hours in advance to request a taxi. So I go back to the Dream Center, I buy a bus ticket, and I begin the journey to these appointments. The first appointment, that unknown building that the parole officer there described, that was Simeon Laboratories. That was for the blood work. I go to that. I do the blood. I call Mr. Pogue before leaving. I don't get an answer. When I leave the blood work, I call Mr. Pogue to let him know that I'm going to the second appointment, which was the x-rays. That is when Mr. Pogue finally answers the phone. I have my cell phone with me. He finally answers the phone. And that's where we get into that follow-up to number two. Mr. Pogue answered the phone, and I immediately explained to him that I've been leaving messages. I asked him, did he get my messages that I have been leaving all week? He says, yes, I saw your messages, but I don't respond to out-of-state phone calls.
So for this purpose, why did you go to Christown Mall? Why did you go to Circle K? Why did you go to McDonald's? Why were you? None of these places had been approved, so why did you go to them, sir?
The Christown Mall is, I'm not at Christown Mall. When I leave the X-ray, which is on 19th Avenue, I was approved to go to the bank. What is indicating on the GPS monitor is not Christown Mall, but I'm on 19th and Bethany, which is a Chase Bank. That's where I was. That's why it picks up this location at Christown Mall. I'm not at Christown Mall. I'm at the bank. But if you'll notice that time, I'm running out of time, and I aborted the waiting to get the money order that I had cash and to open the account. I take the bus and I continue. I'm on my way back to the Dream Center. I get to 19th Avenue and Indian School Road. I get off the bus. I take the next bus on my way back to the Dream Center. I don't know if you're familiar with the sciatic nerve, but it'll kind of give you some warnings when you've overstressed. And my back is tightening up. So when the bus got to 27th Avenue, I wanted to try and walk and just stretch before I got back to the Dream Center. I get off the bus at 27th Avenue in Indian School Road. The bus stop that I got off on is about 60 yards from the actual intersection of 27th and Indian School. I'm on the sidewalk. I never stopped or deviated at a Circle K. I'm only passing the Circle K. And that's what the GPS monitor is picking up. I'm not actually at a Circle K. It's right there on the sidewalk. I never ventured to a Circle K. I never ventured to a McDonald's as this report.
Okay, now let me just hold on for a moment. Hold on for a moment, sir. Mr. Westby, do you have a record of all these phone calls that was made to the various parole officers, sir, during that time frame?
For the chrono notes here, the only phone messages that they state, this is from Parole Officer Pogue, dated October 20th at 7:54 a.m. Says, I got three voicemail messages from Brent's offender dated October 19th, 2017. Called at 9:17 a.m. before he had a doctor's appointment on Monday scheduled. Reported he wanted to get blood work and x-rays done yesterday. There's nothing on here about any other messages for other days other than October 19th, 2017.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Wait just one second.
We'll get back to you. Based upon your experience, Mr. Westby, when are these itineraries, when are they written and approved, sir?
The itineraries are written and approved prior to any movements that they have. Being at the appointment was scheduled for that Monday, that was approved. These other locations, I will say that those GPS points come within about 7 feet of the location. And if he was at a bank, it would have pulled up as a point at a bank, not at Christown Mall, which is a large area. I'm not seeing anything on here that's saying anything about Chase Bank or any of these other locations that he said that he was at. They're pretty specific when you have a GPS point.
Okay. Before I go back to Mr. McFarland, do you have any questions at this time, Mr. Neal, sir?
No, sir.
You have none at this time. Okay. Anything else you want to give us, sir, as it relates to allegation number two? Because we're going to move on in just after we give you an opportunity or others who might want to. Okay, go ahead, sir.
Yes.
But only as it relates to allegation number two. Why?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Mr. Chair, the appointments that I went to, I followed the same path on my way back. 19th Avenue, Indian School Road, the 32nd. I never deviated. I never stopped at a Circle K. At this time, from 1536 to 1540, it alleges that the inmate was at a Circle K store located at 27th Avenue and Indian School. I'm merely standing at the intersection. I was on the north side of Indian School. I was standing at the intersection to cross to the south side. Once I crossed the street, I continued west on Campbell.
Okay, let's not get into the minute details, but let me read this allegation again, and then you've told me that it is false. And it reads that is in violation of Arizona home arrest authorization and condition of supervision number 4.
Yes, sir.
As demonstrated by his leaving his place of residence without prior authorization and not going directly to and from work or other destination authorized by his assigned parole officer on about October 19, 2017. Now that's the allegation. Now the information that's provided with the details, that's one thing, but that's the allegation that I'm asking you that I asked you if it was true or false, and you said that it was false, sir.
Yes, sir.
Were you authorized to go to those various places that day that you have leaving the residence, which I guess is the Green Center, were you authorized to move around and go to other places, sir? Did you have the approval of your parole officer, sir, without the reason, because we can explain all that later, but were you authorized to go to all those places, sir?
As far as being on the itinerary that I did on the day before, it wasn't on the itinerary because I wasn't aware of these appointments. So to answer your question, they wouldn't be on the itinerary. But those same appointments, that paperwork from the urgent care that was given to my parole officer, Mr. Van Gundy, on the 11th, that paperwork, it listed follow-up treatments. And if that's a copy of what was done at urgent care that Ms. Hamm passed on to you earlier, all of that about the follow-up is on that paperwork. When I was at the urgent care on the 11th, Mr. Van Gundy came to the urgent care, Mr. Chair, and I gave him all of the paperwork from the doctor, which included follow-up for 4 or 5 days from that urgent care treatment. I had no knowledge at that time when I gave him the paperwork of when my primary care doctor was going to schedule the follow-up care, but he was aware that there was going to be follow-up care.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir. I'm going to see if Ms. Hamm or your supporter have anything that they wish to add at this time.
Mr. Chairman Donahue, I believe that I don't have a copy of it, but the paperwork I did turn in with relative to allegation number one does, in fact, mention something about follow-up care. And it seems to me that certainly what Mr. McFaul is telling you about standing in front of or waiting at a street corner or getting off the bus and having to walk 60 yards or feet to another point, that those are certainly plausible explanations for his whereabouts when they were tracking his GPS. I know that the department claims that the various businesses that he might have encountered would show up on the GPS as a specific location if he were there, such as the bank and so forth. But I think if there is in fact, and it would be easy to verify, if there is in fact a bank at the corner where Mr. McFaul says it happens to be on the periphery of the Christown Mall, then I think it would be reasonable for this board to assume that that is why he was in that location. And it wouldn't be unreasonable. It doesn't sound to me as though he was engaging in any type of nefarious activity, even though he was unable to get permission. And you did hear testimony that he made 3 calls and left 3 voicemail messages to attempt to reconcile the change in his schedule before he made it.
Thank you so very much. Okay. Mr. Westby, sir. Then I'm going to move forward. I'm going to give Mr. McFaul again, but then I'm going to move forward. Yes, sir.
Would you like to get testimony from Mr. Van Gundy, the Mr. McFaul's parole officer? Because I do have a cell phone number if you'd like to get additional information as far as these points that they pulled up. And also the thing with GPS is it also tracks if the person is in motion or if they had actually physically stopped because it does register miles per hour of the movement.
Okay, maybe if we go to phase two, maybe yes, but right now, no, sir.
Okay.
Mr. McFarland, anything else you want to tell us as it relates to why allegation number two is false, sir?
I'm just trying to explain, Mr. Chair, that the only McDonald's that I passed was once I got to 32nd Avenue in Indian School. As opposed to going to the intersection, I cut through the parking lot. There is a McDonald's there, and I would have certainly came within 7 feet or whatever. And I sent Mr. Pogue a text once I started through the parking lot that cuts through back to 32nd Avenue. At no time did I detour to a Circle K or a McDonald's. And again, I submit that the Christown Mall was because I was at the Chase Bank on 19th and Bethany. It's right there, right across the street from where I exit the bus. So those allegations about the McDonald's and the Circle K and Christown Mall, I never deviated. I never went to those places. I was merely passing those locations, in which the GPS monitor obviously indicated that I was at, but I wasn't actually physically inside of those locations.
Okay, sir. At this time, I'm going to offer a motion. We'll see where it goes as it relates to allegation number one. It's going to be, my motion is going to be based upon information presented to the board by Ms. Hamm, and that the board has had an opportunity to review. This is allegation number one only. My motion will be to find that he was not in violation of allegation number one. As it relates to allegation number two, the motion will be based upon information contained in warrant number 2017-W3579, testimony given by Mr. McFall, as well as testimony given by Mr. Westby. I am going to move to find that he is in violation of allegation number two. And that is based upon that information, that he was delinquent, that he had or may have lapsed into criminal ways or company.
Second.
That is my motion. Board has found that you're in violation of allegation number two, allegation number one, that you're not in violation based upon the information that's been presented to the board and that will become a part of the record. Now we will go into phase two of the hearing. We begin phase two of the hearing by receiving testimony coming from the Department of Corrections again, and this will be we will receive some background information, and then we will come back to you, sir, and to your supporters, and have a discussion at that point. Sir, Mr. Westby, would you give us some background information, sir?
Mr. McFall was released from DOC on September 5th, 2017, and arrested on October 20th, 2017 by electronic monitoring unit staff. There were no new charges. He was back in DOC custody on October 20th, 2017 with a community supervision end date of June 6th, 2079. There were zero abscondes. Current conviction, 1994, armed robbery, life. Prior convictions, 1991, armed robbery, life. This is the second term of supervision. Senior IRS score is a 3-3. Mental health score is a 1. Substance abuse score is a 1. There is no gang information noted. Prior term of supervision, 2016, home arrest release, arrested on tech violation, revoked by the BOEC. His disciplinary is moderate, with drugs, extortion, disorderly conduct, and rioting noted. Arrest, 1979, armed robbery, North Carolina, felony conviction, state prison, 2 counts. 1980, armed robbery, California, felony conviction, state prison. 1983, robbery, California, felony conviction, state prison. 1983, possession of a pistol, California, felony conviction, state prison. 1983, escape, California, felony conviction, state prison. His community risk score is a G3B5.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Westby. Okay, we're back to you, Mr. McFaul. We do take note that when you were released to, you were approved, rather, for your residence to be at Church on the Streets, there at 3210 North Grand Avenue in Phoenix. There was no other residence that was approved. Did you remain at Church on the Streets all while you were out, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we know the answer, but I'm going to ask at any rate, did you find any employment while you were out, sir?
I do have a job awaiting, need to complete that 180-day mandatory that Church on the Street requires, Mr. Chair. For that first 180 days, they do not allow residents in the program to participate in any outside work other than within the program. But I do have a job waiting for me when I complete that 180 days.
And who do you have that job with, sir? Who would be employing you, sir?
It's with Shamrock. It's a $12 an hour job.
Okay.
All I have to do was to pass the drug test, and I had the job available.
Okay. Then you were, of course, you, once all this took place that we've already talked about and that you would probably talk some more about during our discussion with Church on the Streets, do you have anything that would convince the board that you would be readmitted to complete your program at Church on the Streets, sir?
Yes, sir. Once you are admitted into the program is it's available. The approval is for a year. It doesn't have to be reapproved until the end of when I was accepted in September. That acceptance is still valid for a year.
So how long actually were you at Church on the Streets, sir?
45 days, Mr. Chair.
45 days, okay.
Yes, sir.
And it's you need 180 to complete the program. Let me ask.
I would have completed the program in February.
Let me ask this, sir. This is not your first time coming before this board, so why are we talking to you again? Why are you before this board again, sir?
In all honesty, Mr. Chair, I'm aware of everything that Mr. Van Gundy explained to me, and I really believe that I was being proactive and following his instructions by making attempts to contact those supervisor and the parole officers whom he said that I should contact if anything would change. I made all of those efforts to not just go off and do as I please. I was really trying to follow those the rules. It was not my intent to bend the rules. I'm really trying to follow those rules. My goal is to hopefully successfully get off parole. I've been incarcerated for 27 years, Mr. Chair. I don't want to keep coming back here. I want to go through the program and complete it. I want to be successful, and I want to get off parole at some point.
Yes, sir, but regardless of what Mr. Dundee said to you, there were certain conditions, supervision, special conditions that you signed, according to information that we have, on September 5th, 2017. And these were conditions that was given to you per the Board of Executive Clemency. And that's the reason I'm asking why we even talking to you again, because you had these conditions that we had agreed upon, that you agreed upon. You signed it, and you signed them. And I believe that if I'm right, it's A to J. You actually signed them, and they were witnessed by, I'm assuming this is a CO3 who actually witnessed them on September 5, 2017. And I'm just trying to understand, and I'm not passing judgment, but I'm trying to understand why we why you're back, sir.
Well, it certainly wasn't the because of something that I did out of just defying the rules, Mr. Chair. I really was following what the doctor had outlined to do. And I can't explain how the GPS monitor is putting me at locations that I certainly did not venture off and enter into. These locations, with the exceptions of the ranch market, which I was waiting for the cab, I never went to those places. I never ventured to those places.
So you're saying to this board that you never went to any of those places that monitor, just for whatever reason, picked that up, and that's the reason that you, before this board came?
I know where the, certainly I'm aware of where that Circle K is and where the McDonald's is, because I passed those places. But I didn't enter into the McDonald's. Mr. Chair, if I may, if I would have requested permission from Mr. Van Gundy to go to McDonald's and eat, I'm sure he would have put that on the itinerary. But I didn't have any idea at that time that I would be going to those medical appointments. I didn't know that until the next day. I certainly wouldn't have put my freedom in jeopardy by stopping at a McDonald's or a Circle K.
So, sir, when did you know that you were going to go for those medical evaluations or whatever you were going for that? When did you actually know that you were going, sir?
Well, I knew that I was going to have follow-up on the 11th, but the primary care doctor hadn't scheduled the appointments.
When did they schedule the when did the primary doctor schedule that appointment, sir?
She notified me on the 16th, the 16th. Day after I had turned in the itinerary. And that's when I began calling Mr. Pogue and his supervisor on the phone at Church on the Street, because my cell phone wasn't made available to me until I went on the pass on the 19th. They don't allow you to have your cell phones in the residents who are in phase one unless they're on pass.
Okay, hold on just one moment. I want to make sure that I understand. Okay, now Mr. Westby, do you have any criminal notes, phone messages being left between the 16th and the 19th to parole officer Pogue from Mr. McFowler?
That is a negative. The only messages that they show in criminal notes were received on October 19th, 2017 starting at 9:17 a.m.
None on the 16th, 17th, or 18th?
None. And I did get an email from Officer Van Gundy, and he is available to testify telephonically if you'd like to get additional information.
Okay, may I have his number, please, sir?
602-771-5699.
Thank you, sir. I'm just going to use another form. I know we already have the expert in the room, but I'm just going to use another one.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes, sir. Look, let me just follow up.
The 16th, 17th, and 18th were on the Churchill Street phone. It was from their phone.
Parole Officer Van Gundy.
Yes, sir, Parole Officer. This is the Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy. We're holding a hearing at this point for Mr. McFall, and we wanted to get some information from you, sir. Are you available, sir?
I am available, sir.
Okay. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you swear firm?
I swear, sir.
Okay, sir. Now, there may be several questions, but I want to start off by, according to Mr. McFall, 16th, 17th, and 18th, there were phone calls, messages that were left on your phone requesting, my words now, requesting that his itinerary would be adjusted. Do you have any messages at all, or did you have any messages on
not,
16,
not on
17,
phone,
and 18? Or any, are you aware of any other officer, parole officer, who might have had the messages left on those days, sir?
On the 15th, sir, I saw Mr. McFall at his place of residence. I gave him, because I was going on vacation, which was, I believe, a Sunday, because I was going on vacation the following week, so I gave him contact info when I did his itinerary for that week. I gave him the telephone number for Senior Parole Officer Pareda and Parole Officer Pogue to get a hold of in the event of him needing to request anything that was not on the itinerary that he gave me on that day. So I did give him contact information for Senior Parole Officer Pareda, Parole Officer Pogue, and according to the notes that I have, Parole Officer Pogue stated that he did get a couple of emails dated on the 19th from the offender.
I'm looking at 16, 17, and 18. I think we all agree that the 19th, we all agree that on the 15th you met with him.
Yes.
We all agree on the 19th that messages were sent,
yes,
email or however they were sent. But I'm not being technical,
sure,
but I'm looking at 16, 17, and 18.
Okay, so according to my notes, for his itinerary on the 16th, he did not request any movement. On the 17th, he did not request any movement. And on the 18th, the only movement that he asked for was to be out from 4:30 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. to do the DC outreach program across the street. That's all that was requested for him for those 3 days.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. Mr. Neil, do you have any questions for the parole officer, sir?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, you can feel free to stay on the phone. There may be some other questions, but we know that you may have other commitments, and we do.
No, I'm fine, sir. I'm not here if you need me.
Okay, sir. Well, we certainly appreciate it. Okay. I think in order that we can move forward, we do have supporters here. And I believe that Ms. Kemp wishes to speak. Would she come forward? And I believe you're going to stand with her, Ms. Hamm, and assist her however is needed, or Director Kirschborn, whoever will assist her at this time. And first of all, would you please state your name for the record?
Oh, yes. Good morning. I'm Evelyn Deskilly. I came here today to support the spirit back to the parole at Church at the Street.
And please remind her that she's still on the oath. I bet she is on the oath.
You're still under oath.
Good morning, and thank you so much for your patience. And what do you want to tell the board?
Tell us, what do you want to tell the board?
Well, The first thing I was going to do is go into the medical thing, but I think that's how we can cover it.
Yeah.
So, I skipped that off. Just to give you a background, you know, they say the biggest problem in the world today could have been solved when it was small. And back in 1988, 89, Otis and I, we realized he's in trouble with drugs. And he wanted to go to rehab. And we looked at the rehab facilities, but we just couldn't afford them at the time. And so, unfortunately, it's like a medical problem became a criminal problem. I'll be the first to admit, I don't understand addiction. I'm like, you know, it's bad for you, just stop it, you know? I don't understand addiction. I understand it more now. I didn't realize that addiction can be so powerful, it just takes over your life. And it's no excuse, but it's just really a sad situation where if you don't get help, it just gets worse. And it's not like they can just stop, you know, like most normally people who don't have the disease, you know, something bad, you don't do it. But addiction, it just takes over your life and just messes it up. I do
talk about the good things he was doing while he was out since September.
Well, he was out. We already had a good relationship, but I spent hours visiting him at Church Avenue Street. By the way, I didn't realize he's still considered an inmate until I talked to Mr. Van Gundy after he was arrested. And he says he's still an inmate. And I thought when he got paroled, he was a free man reported to his parole officer. Like when I visited him in prison, I'd sit outside in the sun on a picnic table visiting. And now I'm back at Church on the Street in the sun visiting him. But we had children, and he had a good relationship with the grandkids, everybody. He always asked me, I got some personal time, not that it's personal out in the sun, but he always wanted me to bring the grandkids.
Talk about what he was doing when he was out in the community.
Oh, he went on outreaches at Church on the Street. In fact, one of the fellows said that he's doing very well. He worked hard and, you know, they were sad that he had gotten arrested. But he was doing good work. And it's 27 years. I can't tell you what goes on in the mind of a man who's been into institutionalization for 27 years. But I think he came out pretty well considering what he's been through 27 years. I have 27 years of love letters from him. He has 27 years of trial and tribulation of what I've been going through on the outside. I had to turn off those emotions. I couldn't do that while I was in prison. I had to pretend I was a nun. So, like I told my daughter Raina, she's my granddaughter Raina, she's the oldest 11. He came over last weekend and we got to talking about Grandpa Otis. And I was trying to tell her that, you know, they said that the other went to McDonald's and Circle K, but he said he didn't. And she said, I told her, we take our freedom so casually, you know, we can just go to McDonald's and whatever, but he wasn't supposed to. But he told me he didn't. And I believed him because he's been truthful with me. But I wanted to impress upon Rainer that he didn't do any criminal activity to end up back in prison. He wasn't doing anything criminal. When he's in prison, other inmates were his peers. And then, just out of the street, he's still in prison there, but the, you know, the other people in the discipleship program, they come from homeless or out of jail, whatever. They're free to come and go, and, you know, they just tell the desk at the lobby, church on the street, you know, we leave and we come back. But, I don't know. It's just really hard. I think he's just adjusting well, but I think it was hard that after 27 years, it still felt like, it still feels like prison. And I asked him, Otis, how long do you have to wear an ankle bracelet? And he says, I don't know. And I said, well, you know, this should be like a gold rope to, you know, like, was it 6 months, a year? How long do you wear an ankle bracelet? Anyway, you bound you about 25 years, like, it's nothing, but 27 years, it's painful, it's really hard. And they say a picture is worth a thousand words. I just want to show you something. This was a year before he was sent to prison. And,
do you want to give
them? Oh, yeah.
But if I turn it in to them, they have to keep it as part of their public
record. It's okay. We don't even look like the same people. But like I told Otis, you know, we don't look the same. But you're still Otis, and I'm still Melinda. I'm sorry, I don't mean it.
Just relax, just relax.
I didn't mean to do this.
Yes, ma'am.
Talking to my family, my daughter's not here, she can't deal with this. But on behalf of myself, my family, and my grandchildren, we have seven, and I really enjoyed Grandpa. I ask you to take it into consideration. Just think about how people are the church on the street. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so very much. And are there any questions or anything else you want to add, Ms. Ham? We always want to give you that opportunity.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of thoughts. I've listened to, I don't know Mr. McFaul. I only met his supporters here through her contacting me because she wasn't familiar with the revocation process and wanted a little bit of help about how to help Mr. McFaul. And it appears as though after listening to everything today, that at the very least, Mr. McFaul has not strictly to the letter followed what he was supposed to do with his home arrest approvals in advance, but it does sound as though he tried. I know you heard from his parole officer that went on vacation that he didn't have any calls, but I think before you could conclusively determine that Mr. McFaul never made any calls on the 16th, 17th, or 18th, you would also have to talk to the other two parole officers who were assigned to replace him while he was on vacation to see if they also had anything on their cell phones. But in any case, I just want to raise the specter of, even if Mr. McFaul was guilty of violating his term of supervision by not getting advanced approval to be in the places that he was, and let's assume for a minute that he is guilty of that. You've already found him guilty, and let's say he did that deliberately. And I'm just wondering and asking the board to consider before you vote today if that action alone is worth putting a man back in prison who has spent 27 years already in prison for attempted armed robbery. That was the apparently the committing offense for which he received a life sentence. Maybe he needs a really strong face-to-face meeting with his parole officer to really emphasize the importance of not doing anything without advance written approval, except obviously if it's a hospital emergency. I assume that that kind of thing would be taken into account. Maybe he needs some redirection. Maybe he's a little institutionalized. But I'm just asking the board if what you've heard today suggests to you that it is so serious and so egregious that he needs to go back to prison for this behavior, and ask you to take that into account. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Yes, Mr.
I do want to note that I saw some information here that maybe Mr. Van Gundy can provide.
Well, let's wait for a moment on that. But let me go to his other supporter, his sister, I believe, is Ms. Collins on the phone. Ms. Collins, you still on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Remember, you're still on the oath. What's, please state your name for the record, please, ma'am.
Hello, Collins.
And what do you want to tell the board?
I was just listening to Ms. Pam, and I think everything she said makes sense to me. And I just figured I'm going to take into consideration what she said and what my brother said. And it's not the next thing I can say, but I just pray God that y'all think about it a little bit more before you hang out to jail.
Thank you so very much. Any questions? Hearing no questions, thank you so very much. You're welcome to stay on the phone when we come towards the end of the hearing. Okay, okay, I'm going back to you, Mr. Westby. Mr. Westby, sir.
Yes, there's some additional information that I saw in the chronicle that said Mr. Van Gundy could provide regarding the no movement in each of those locations that were mentioned. And for the length of time, the duration, which was approximately an hour, but he can give you exact.
Thank you so much. Okay, Mr. Van Gundy, before we start coming towards the end of this hearing, in addition to what Mr. Westby had asked, I want to ask you another question, sir.
Yes, sir.
You were his parole officer. How long were you his parole officer, sir? Do you recall?
If you give me a second, I can look. This is I've had him before. This is my second time with him. He was released the second time on. Give me just 1 second to pull it up. I apologize.
No problem, sir.
He was released on home arrest status and arrived to me on September 5th.
That's this year, sir. 17?
Say again, sir?
Is that 2017?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. September 5th, 2017.
Okay, sir. And during that period or previously, Did you observe or report violations of his conditions that he was on?
I'm sorry, sir, can you repeat the question,
please? Yes, I'm asking if you observed or do you have notes, your printed notes, showing that he had violations in the past, sir?
Let me see. No, sir. He had, we had, every time I see him, we would discuss his itinerary for the week. So up until the time that I went on vacation, he was in compliance.
Okay, sir. Any further questions, Mr. Neal?
Sir, you say this is the second time you had him. So the first time when he was originally released on home arrest, you would appeal and involved with him?
Board members, I'm sorry. I can hardly hear.
I'm sorry. You say that when he was originally released on home arrest, you were his PO at that time?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. My issue is that my information shows that he was when he was reinstated, the board put a very specific instruction to him as far as following mandatory DOC conditions and sanctions. So from that, I take it he was violated for some not following something. But when he came back out and he was reassigned to you, did you go over that issue with him real well so that he understood he's not supposed to leave home if he doesn't have permission and those things?
Yes, that's affirmative. And also on the day in question of which was I believe the 15th when I spoke to Mr. McFall regarding, I was very thorough with him. I did explain to him at least three times to make sure that's knowing that I was going to be on vacation. I make it a firm practice that I give at least two numbers, especially one which is out of a supervisor, for them to be able to contact in case of an emergency. And I made sure to explain to Mr. McFall less than three times to not deviate from the itinerary without prior approval from Senior Officer Pareda or Patrick Pogue, which are the two numbers that I gave him. I told him at least three times to make sure to get authorization that his itinerary was final unless there was extenuating circumstances. But prior to moving or prior to leaving, he was to get approval first.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay. We're coming to the end of your hearing, Mr. McFall. However, this is your hearing. We want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board without repeating yourself. So what else you want to tell the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination, sir?
Well, I just want to say that I believe that I'm in a good place with Church on the Streets. I opted to go there as opposed to going directly to my residence because I wanted to gradually be reintegrated into society. It's a great program, it's great people. I believe that with this program, if given reinstatement, I can fulfill the vow that I made to complete the program. And from there, if I go and get a job and go to work or stay at the program another 6 months or go to my residence, I know that I can successfully fulfill my obligation. It's up to me to follow the rules according to DOC's rules while on home arrest, as well as the rules that the board has stipulated. It was never my intent to challenge the rules, to bend the rules, and to deviate from the rules. Again, I believe that I was being proactive in doing what Mr. Van Gundy advised, to make contact with the supervisor and the other parole officer. And I sincerely and honestly made those attempts on that Monday and that Tuesday and that Wednesday. And I just hope that the board will really take it in consideration to give me another opportunity to go back to the program and to go back to be with my kids and my grandkids and my family. And I appreciate it. I just want to thank the board for their consideration. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so very much, sir. At this time, the board is going into discussion. It may sound as if we're talking to you, but we're not. We're just talking among ourselves, Mr. Neal and myself. We're just talking among ourselves. Following our discussion, we will come back with the decision. As you know by now, that we do operate under the open meeting laws of the state of Arizona. Whatever we do, whatever we say is done in the public. We do not go behind closed doors. Therefore, we will do this in public at this time. The board is now in discussion. It may sound, again, may sound we're talking to you or to your supporters or to the officials from the Department of Corrections, but we're not. This is just us, the two of us talking. Therefore, we're going to ask everyone else to remain quiet. I'm also going to ask that everyone remain quiet when the board renders its determination, because we all are professionals and we know that sometimes decisions come down that neither side is, that one or the other side may not be happy with. So well, we do ask for your consideration. This is a very unfortunate situation. The board is not in discussion, by the way. But this is a very unfortunate situation that Mr. McFall, whatever happened during that period of time concerns. I am concerned. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm concerned. I recognize the fact that I'm only talking about 3 days. But during those 3 days, something happened. What? Nobody knows but Mr. McFall. He was there. The rest of us was not there. He did have that GPS device on him, which pointed out where he was. It does not point out what he was doing, but we do know where he was during that period of time. Another disappointment that I have today is the fact that Church on the Street is not here today. Church on the Street shows up quite often for these hearings, but for whatever reason, they didn't show up today. And that's one of the concerns that I have. If this board were to release him on home arrest again, would he be eligible to return to Church on the Street? Or would the Department of Correction have to find somewhere else for him to reside? Because he would be, you know, regardless if he were released, he would still be under the guidance of the Department of Corrections. And they would have to approve anywhere that he does, as well as the terms and conditions that he would that he would be under. I think that Mr. McFall is an honest person. He's had all of these years incarcerated, and according to, I believe, information that I he is now 59 years of age. Next year he will be 60. That's why I just can't understand how this happened. I understand that he has some medical conditions that he needed to get to this emergency care, whatever it's called. why something was not, intervention did not take place that would have provided why, that he would not be here. My final concern is that this is not the first time that he's come before this board. You know, it's hard for me as a board member when this board makes its determination. Please be quiet on the other end on the phone. Please be quiet. When one comes back before the board, it's a real concern. How can you do this? The board has put its reputation on the line by giving this opportunity, and then we come back again. This is, I believe, the second time, and that concerns me. But before I go any further, I want to listen to my colleague, Honorable Mr. Neal. Mr. Neal, sir.
Well, sir, I agree with what you're saying. I heard a lot of explanation about not being at this location or that location specifically. So in other words, you may have walked in front of the McDonald's, but that wasn't your destination. But in reading the allegations and everything, it doesn't say he went to McDonald's. It doesn't say that he went, you know, any place in particular, other than the fact he left the residence without prior approval. And so if he left the residence without prior approval, anywhere he went was without prior approval, which is a definite violation of the terms and conditions. And apparently that's the same problem he had before when he came in front of the board. He had problems with not following directions. That's the only way I can reconcile the specific instructions from the board. I know he's been incarcerated a long time, but it's during that time he had to follow a lot of rules that I'm sure he didn't really care for. But in being incarcerated, you have to follow the rules when the board gives you an opportunity to go out on home arrest to prove that you're ready for regular parole. You have to follow the rules, and this is the second time that he's been violated for not following the rules. So I'm not at all comfortable returning him to home arrest at this time.
Thank you, sir. I think that we do need to, you know, before we make a motion, that we do need to look at the fact that he is, that how long he was incarcerated and the conditions. But as you say, you know, it's one of the things, and is that this is the second time. And I just wish that this is tough to sit here and make these type decisions. And I know they can and are emotional. I'm going to make a motion. We see where it goes. And it's going to be based once again upon the information contained in warrant number 2017-3579, testimony from the Department of Corrections to Mr. Westby and to Mr. Van Gundy, testimony coming from Mr. McFall as well as his supporters, when we weigh all of the evidence, and my motion is very heavy towards this is the second time, which would be the third time that he would have come before this board, or the second time come before this board for a violation. Therefore, I'm going to move to find that he did violate terms and conditions of supervision, that he was delinquent, that he had, or may have lapsed into criminal ways, since we don't know what he was doing at those various places. Therefore, I'm not going to say he did violate, because we really don't know, but he had or may have, and because his parole officers have no idea whatsoever, according to their testimony, and they are also under oath, according to their testimony, or why he was at these various places. Therefore, I'm going to move to revoke his community supervision based upon the same.
A second.
termination of this board, his community supervision has been revoked. That is, when I say his community supervision, I really mean his home arrest. He will be eligible to come before this board at some time in the near future. It does not go all the way out to whatever year that year is. It does not go that far out to 27, whatever that is. I can't even read it. He will be available to come before this board once he's certified by the Department of Corrections, and we look forward to seeing him at that time. Thank you so very much. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Ham. Thank you, Ms. Collins, and the rest of you for your participation. And the hearing is over. Thank you.